Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator Podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh,
that's a nice eye.
Yeah.
That was a fast one. Holy cow.
How's everyone doing out there tonight? Welcome to the fifth installment of Red Bearded Predator Weekly. So on this week's show, we have some good topics for you guys. We have a Green Bay walleye update because we were out this past weekend. We're going to be talking about turkey gear, what we cover or what we carry to the woods, and our plans for season A coming up here in Wisconsin. And I have my two awesome co-hosts. I have Bud, and I have Andy. How you doing tonight, boys?
Good. Well, better than what we were on Sunday.
Got that right. What you drinking tonight, Bud? Anything good?
Well, just a good old standby. Blue Mountain soda.
Nice. Andy?
Tonight, it's a beer night. I got one of those I'm working on, but I got some spotted cows on deck. So.
I gotcha. Unfortunately, I'm on call for work, so I just have water. So, gotta be sober tonight. So
you seem to always have an excuse of not to drink during this.
Yeah, I know. Well, I just don't have a lot of beer in my apartment because I'm by myself and I never know when I'm here and not. So yeah. Anyway, should we recap the weekend on the bay here, boys?
Sure, if you want.
Well, I guess the overall the big thing that we took away is that we weren't on the fish. Besides, yep. Andy catching the 26 Saturday morning at 7:30. It was pretty dull the entire weekend. Just the things that we've been discussing is maybe we were targeting a pattern we thought they'd be on a little too early. We thought they would be on the flats of the bay, and it might be a little bit too early for that. I'm not sure if you guys at home watch In-Depth Outdoors. Over the past weekend, they were fishing the Okano River, and they were targeting the channel edge heading out to the bay, and we think we made a mistake by getting away from that channel too quick. Bud and Andy, do you guys want to add your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll just add, like, the pattern that we were attacking is a pattern that we kind of played and discovered that normally happens that early May to mid-May, late May, all depending on how the temps and the water temp is going.
Yeah.
And I kind of took the lead thinking that we were going to be there right now just with how fast and quick the spawn went. And everything I'm hearing that the pier is pretty much done. Everybody up there, you're catching white bass, sheephead, catfish now. So I was kind of banking that the walleyes were going to be hitting those flats for feeding. But I'm just thinking maybe they're still in that transition from the dam to the flats.
Yeah.
So it kind of still plays that they're more the river channel, you know, deep water yet.
Yeah. And I think that's in the case, especially with the big females, because we did pluck off one male trolling on the flats, but I just feel like those big females are in that transition period. And it makes perfect sense. I mean, Andy's, you caught your fish on a channel break, right?
I was on that right on the channel break. You know, and I, you know, I was talking with some guys at work that fish more north, and they were saying the same. You know, they were finding them still in the channels yet. Down, you know, when we mentioned the deep water, I think some of that might come into play with the weather that we were having. You know, we were, you know, on what, day two or day three of a pretty high pressure system, so you know, maybe that was pushing the fish down a little bit, but you know, I don't know, they just
we missed
the target. That's what it boiled down to.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking if and the conditions we faced Sunday, it was nasty 20 to 30 mile an hour winds coming out of the northeast, and those fish could have been sheltered on the bottom of those breaks too, because it was just gnarly out there. Yeah, like you guys said, either way, we missed the mark, but good thing it's not tournament weekend yet, because we still have time to adjust and make some more adjustments as we pre-fish towards the upcoming tournament here in 2 weeks. So hopefully we can make the proper adjustments, find some good pods of fish here, and produce something good for the tournament is what I'm hoping for. Yeah, that's pretty short recap of what went on this weekend, but that was our experience. So I figured we do have season A turkey coming up, believe it or not, in 7 or 8 days here.
Before we jump into the turkey stuff here.
Oh, go ahead, bud.
My would you rather?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Is I'm gonna split it up just because Andy doesn't have a lot of turkey experience, but they're gonna still go together. But Eric, yours is gonna be turkey hunting related.
Okay.
So now Andy, you're gonna relate yours to a goose hunt, and Eric is gonna relate his to a turkey hunt.
Okay.
Now, would you guys rather go out, we're just going to say opening morning, and you're going to call, you're going to be on birds, and in the matter of the first half an hour, you're going to limit out, Andy, you're going to limit out on geese, and Eric, you're going to bag your bird in the first half hour.
Okay.
Or would you rather have to take the effort? And Andy, you're going to have to work birds all day long to get your limit, but you're going to be in steady calling and reacting to birds. And Eric, you're going to sit there and have one gobbler that you're going to talk to all day, and he's going to be alone, but you're going to chase him 3 ridges and all over the woods. And you're not going to limit out or bag out till a half hour before the end of the day.
I know what I'm going with.
Am I first?
You can go first, Andy.
All right. Well, Eric, I don't think we've had the pleasure to waterfowl hunt together. But Bud and I, we've hunted a lot of waterfowl together, and he probably knows the answer to this because I enjoy calling and working birds, and I will take the all-day hunt. Where, you know, you guys both experience it with turkey hunting. There is something special about speaking the language of an animal and getting them to do what you want them to do, even if it's slow. I mean, yeah, we've had some great hunts where we've done that, where we've hunted and we've bagged out within a half an hour, and it's like, you know, that's great, but, you know, most of the hunting stories that I repeat and I talk about are stories of, you know, working those birds, or, you know, even better yet, you got a group of guys hunting a field kitty corner or a quarter mile away or something like that, and you see those birds come to their spread, and you can call them away and bring them into your spread, you know, do that sales pitch and convince those birds that you got the better layout, better spread. That's a good feeling. Something special.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I guess for me, turkey hunting, I would go with chasing a bird up and down hills through the woods, to grandmother's house we go. That's kind of my style. I love hunting for that experience, and I just feel like the experience of chasing a bird like that just makes the hunt that much greater. Not saying I won't enjoy taking a bird right away, but for me, it's all about the chase, all about the experience of hunting them down. So that's what I'll go with all day. So.
Good deal. I'm going to sit in the same boat. I mean, if the circumstances allow it, I'd much rather a hunt go on as long as possible. I mean, I got no problem. If I got the time, I'll hunt all 7 days of my turkey season if it allowed it. You know, if I'm having action every day and talking to birds all week long, I mean, I love that.
Right. I guess that would be my asterisk, right? That's the stipulation. If you're getting some kind of feedback, you know, I've had those days too where you get out your spread and, you know, you spend 2-3 hours in the morning getting everything just right and you don't see a single bird, or if you do, yeah, they don't even hear you or respond to you or anything. It's like, those days are discouraging. Those,
yeah, are funny. No, you know, you're gonna have interaction all day, Andy.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree with you 100%, whether it's waterfowl or turkey. Interaction all day is what it's all about. That's what every hunter lives for. I mean, maybe when I'm 70 years of age, I'll take the bird within the first half hour. But until then, I'm going to enjoy every single minute of every single hunt. So even when the weather's the worst. For instance, not to go down a rabbit hole here, but me and Bud in Nebraska ended up having a hunt. Our first night there, we were staying on pretty much a mountainside with 40 to 50 mile an hour winds, 40 degree temperatures, and we froze. Nope, we couldn't have picked a better campsite, but I don't know, that's just...
Well, and it turned out being good. The next night we fell asleep with gobblers roosting 50 yards from our campsite.
Yep.
Still couldn't shoot them, but
yep,
they were there.
But that's the reason I think all three of us hunt is for that chase, for that challenge. So, yeah. That was a good question, Bud. I like that a lot. Something a little bit different. So, we're going to have...
Anybody watching, type which one you'd rather. You want an all-day hunt of interaction, or do you want to be wham, bam, and done in 30 minutes?
Andy, I think you got to come up with something next week, eh?
All right. I can do that.
All right. You guys ready to get into, like, turkey gear?
Sure.
And what you guys take to the woods? I figured the best way that we can do it, since we're not all bringing out gear, is that I have my turkey vest out here, and you guys can just add whatever you feel that you would carry in your packs. Sound good? My slate call, I got off Amazon for like $9. Maybe it was 12, something like that. It's called the Little Deuce. I think Primos makes it. Does good enough for me. You guys both carry slate calls?
Oh, I think I probably have 4 in my bag, or 4 in my vest.
Yeah,
if we're on slate calls. So if we're talking slate calls, this one here, I've had this one for ages, and it's Primo's the Freak. And what I like about this one is it's actually designed to be strapped to your leg. So the main reason I bought this is when I first started hunting, I couldn't run a diaphragm to save my life. So at least this one I could have strapped to my thigh. And when the bird's coming in, I can have one hand on my gun yet with my knee up. And with my trigger hand, I can still actually be running a slate call as the bird's coming in. So that's the main reason. Like, as far as a beginner hunter, I would totally recommend this because it's a lot easier to run a slate than it is a diaphragm. this one's got the friction night on it, so even if it gets wet, it still works. But then I got a slate call, I got a triple glass call, I got an aluminum call for really windy days. I'm a call junkie when it comes to turkey. I got way too many of them.
Easy enough to do.
Yeah. Andy, you carrying a slate call on you?
Yeah, I don't have any of my stuff up here with me, so downstairs, but I do have, I got a slate, and then I do have a glass. The glass actually sounds a little better. In my opinion, sounds a little better for me. I have learned to mix and match, the strikers as well.
That makes a big difference. A lot different sounds of call.
Yeah, yeah. And when you start mixing and matching them, you know, whether you got like a carbon fiber versus wood versus whatever, makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you guys on that. I guess we can go through diaphragm calls next then. So I carry 4 diaphragm calls. I carry 4, reason being is I like a raspy call.
I got 2, Eric, 4.
I like a raspy call. I like kind of a mixed rasp high pitch. Then I like the high pitch one. Then the fourth one is just kind of a backup call. So that's kind of what I got for calls. All my calls are made by Woodhaven. Not just because the hunting public uses it, but I've heard from a variety of YouTube channels, just Woodhaven's kind of the cream of the crop that is something affordable. So that's what I roll with. Bud, what you got?
Mine are kind of just real cheap ones. Like, I've always looked at the Woodhaven ones. Mine are more or less just like your value packs. You can buy at Walmart, Fleet Farm, whatever. And it comes with 3 different calls. But yeah, it's like an easy rasp, a raspy old hen. I find I can get to my ear, a lot better turkey sound out of the raspy calls. Yeah, I might not be able to do the distance calls, but I got my box call and my slate calls for that. I want my diaphragm calls for the finishers. And then, like, my fourth call, the orange one, that's actually a youth model call, because I run into a big issue because I got a narrow palate that an actual adult call is hard for me to blow. So I always have to trim them way down. And then I tried a youth call, and that one actually fit real nice. And that's the call that I mainly use the most, is the youth call.
Yeah. Cool. Right on. All right, Andy, what you got?
So when it comes to malt call, I'm pretty green, pretty new at it. I, like Bud, have a narrow palate, and my palate is actually really tall, really high. So I did find that the youth calls fit much better. I don't have to do nowhere near as much trimming on it to get it to seal properly. And I don't even recall what kind I ended up going with.
That's cool. That's cool.
It was a relatively inexpensive call. It was, it was sub $10 call at Fleet Farm.
Yeah. No, that makes complete sense. And I just want to say, those of you who are listening to the podcast, is that I highly recommend, because I was new to calling about 3 or 4 years ago, buy some of the cheapest calls you can find off the racks at, Fleet Farm, Walmart, wherever, and start off, like Andy said, trimming those edges to fit your mouth at first, just so you get used to something being in your mouth. You're not gagging every 2 seconds, and those starter calls are absolutely perfect. And I've gotten to the point where I can pretty much play anything now. So, yeah, so don't go blowing your budget on Woodhaven calls right away. That's what I would say. That's one important piece of advice. So what else do I got? Obviously, got camel gloves for my hands and whatnot. You guys, I take it you guys both are going to be wearing camel gloves so you guys don't stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, I'll be wearing camel gloves. Andy's more doing the blind thing.
Okay.
So he can probably get away with, if he's got the sun shining in, you know, maybe putting some paint just to dull up the skin tones, but being in a blind, Andy won't have to do as much.
Yeah, this year, as you guys both know, Archer is very interested in turkey hunting with me. So anybody that has kids can understand that, you know, keeping an 11-year-old still in the woods is going to be difficult. Even Bud can attest to this. Even I have a problem sitting still in the woods. So a blind was the way to go for me this year, just to get Archer's feet wet and get him out there hunting. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll have some camel on. But, you know, for us being inside the blind, as long as we got dark colors on, we should be sitting pretty okay.
You guys looking at just wearing black then?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
At least up top.
Yeah, that's what I used to do when I didn't have a shotgun, started off bull hunting turkeys when I was in a blind. I just wore pretty much black, and that seemed to work out pretty well. So the next piece of equipment I carry here, guys, is a couple of neck gaiters here. I always carry an extra one just in case I have a buddy forget theirs, or if I forget mine, I have an extra one. I think that's pretty much self-explanatory, eh, guys?
Yeah.
One thing that I carry is a turkey tote. I like it in my situation because carrying a turkey up bluffs and stuff is not fun to do with just grabbing them by the legs. I like having a turkey tote. That's kind of my personal preference. You guys have anything like that?
No, I utilize the game bag on the vest.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Okay. Yeah, and I
Andy has a pack mule, so
yeah. I have an extra set of hands.
Yeah, that's true. The reason I have that is because I actually put my tripod in my bird tote, so that's why I do that way. Got a couple scratch pads. I got some sandpaper just to scratch up the slate. I'm assuming you guys have the same.
I got a fancy tool that does it. It's got a stone and a scratch pad. It's got a piece of chalk for my box call.
Oh, what do you know? I found it. I found my my box call. I knew I had it somewhere. Oh, got my first roll of TP. You guys better be carrying some Randy Newberg mount money on you.
I learned from all the waterfowling. You need to up your game, Eric. Get rid of the toilet paper and go baby wipes, man.
I don't like baby wipes because you know what? They freeze on me. Of course, you need shells. I'm assuming you guys carry shells.
Yeah, I have a couple. You only need one.
You can find them nowadays.
I had shells from last year in this vest I didn't even know about. That makes me happy. What else I got in here? I got an orange thing just in case you're carrying a bird out or something like that. Might be worth having on you. There's the sandpaper.
That's a good ad. I never thought about that.
Oh, the blaze orange?
Having a wears like a knit hat or something like that if you're carrying out a bird on public.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like
yeah, it. Like for you, like just that, then like 99, or I don't know, probably more than 99 cents, but you know, the couple of dollars super cheap vest that you just throw over and they got like the Velcro sides. You can just wrap the bird in that or something like that for carrying it out.
Yeah, I think it's a smart move.
I've got a number of those from over the years of Archer growing up and having those when I take them all with me. So.
And they're easy enough to fold up really small and just put in a pocket somewhere in a backpack.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I like that one. That's a good takeaway for me anyway on this, for this one.
Yeah, learning experience for all here. Got more toilet paper. very important. Yeah, very important. Always have water on you, whether it's to hydrate or just wet your mouth for when you're calling. Because I noticed last year when I was going up big hills and whatnot, my mouth got dry. And trying to call with a dry mouth is pretty difficult. So having water on you. You guys, I'm assuming you guys carry water.
I'm pretty sure my new vest has a place for my camel back, so.
I got more toilet paper.
You're never short.
Never know. Never know.
Are you empty?
I am empty. I'm a minimalist, though, when it comes to hunting. You guys know that.
Yeah.
That's all I got. What would you guys add if you had to add anything? I forgot sometimes I do carry a hen, depending on the situation, but the more experienced I got, the least amount of time that I actually carry a hen. So I guess that's...
Yeah, I guess, now, I could probably, knowing you, I know how you do it, but as far as turkey hunters in general, I didn't see you pull out a single locator call.
Yeah. I, like I said, I'm a minimalist. I just use my voice, and that has worked for me. But to be fair, when I'm bored in a vehicle and by myself, I actually practice the owl hoots. I practice my coyote yells. It's just something I actually practice. I don't go out there just with, you know, sound like crap. I actually put some time into that. You guys have any locator calls or anything like that?
Well, yeah, because I mean, I do like the whole for the coyote squeal or howl, you know, and then you got that screech owl sound. I can voice that, but like I said, I'm a call junkie, so I do have an owl hooter where it's just that plastic thing that kind of echoes your voice, which I'm not really good at because the big part about doing that call is, you know, rolling your R's and stuff like that. And yeah, if I ever took Spanish class, I would fail in the first week because there's no way I can roll my tongue. I got a crow call, which that more or less I kind of just blow in and make noise. I have a peacock call because that's super high pitched and you can, it's pretty much just a hose that's got like the ribs like a shot back, but it just makes this high pitched sound. It's just making a shot gobble. And then I actually do have a shake gobble call, which most of the time I use for a locator call, except for the first turkey I shot, which I actually brought in the three jakes with the gobble call. That was the only thing that would draw them in. But yeah, I got all those locator calls. You know, if they're not in my vest, they're going to at least be in the truck with me when I'm driving around. But other than that, I think you pretty much got it all covered, Eric.
Yeah.
So, as a relatively new turkey hunter myself, what about the vest itself? It sounds like, Bud, you got a new vest, huh?
Yeah, I started out with just a super cheap vest. Pretty much, it just has a bunch of pockets. It's got a game bag, and then it's got a flip down pad seat that's maybe an inch thick. That's what I started out as, but just over time, I mean, like the side straps, they're just kind of the slide adjusts and they never hold. You know, pretty soon you walk a little bit and then you're pretty much wearing like a poncho. You got things were just swinging around, and I just didn't like it, and super thin. So I ended up, I upgraded this year. Or actually, I upgraded last year for when we were going out to Nebraska, which ended up getting canceled and all that. But that vest is, it's probably got the same amount of pockets. Doesn't have as big of pockets, but it's got, every pocket is, it's designed to do something. Pockets are shaped for a slate call. They're shaped for a box call. And then it actually has a kickstand on it. So it's actually got framework to where if I'm running in, I'm running and gunning on a bird, and I get to a field edge that I want to call it, this bird across the field, well, I don't have a tree to lean against, but there's tons of bushes. I can kick this kickstand out, and I can literally just lay back in a bush, and that's what I'm using as my cover. Oh, and that was my big selling point for that turkey vest. I don't actually need something to lean against. I can lean right against my turkey vest.
Sure. That's a cool idea.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the higher end turkey vests, but in the long run, I mean, I feel like there could be circumstances. I mean, especially out west. I mean, when we were hunting Nebraska, there were some spots where we were hunting wide open. There were some spots we were hunting dark timber. But, I mean, in your dark timber, you might be in small pine trees or something like that where you don't have something to actually break up your silhouette. But there's plenty of sagebrush and stuff like that where, you know, sagebrush, that's more than plenty wide enough to break up your outline.
Sure.
So that's why I really like the kickstand idea.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of guys like that kickstand. I know one of our buddies, Dan, out in Connecticut, he uses the Alps with the kickstand, and he loves it, so...
That's the exact same one that I got as the Alps.
Yeah, I saw the review he did on that from Do It Then Outdoors. He had a really good review on that, and it looked like a phenomenal vest. If, like Bud said, if you're open in an open timber or something like that and you don't have a lot of cover and you find a brush pile or something like that, could see it being useful then, along with field edges. Say if you don't have a tree on a field edge, I could see it being useful there too. So, but for me, I just did a Google search of best budget turkey vest, and I ended up picking up a Bass Pro Shop one, and it has done nothing but treat me well for the price point. I think I spent like $49.99 or $59.99 on it. And I have not had any issues, and this will be my third year running it. It's got a seat, like a little pad for you to sit on, fairly comfortable. It's got slots for calls, got a slot for your box call, got an area for your slate call, got areas for your diaphragm calls, has a bunch of pockets. I mean, for the price point, that Bass Pro Shop, I have no complaints. So, if you're on a budget, check out some of the Bass Pro Shop Redhead stuff. I know sometimes they make their stuff a little bit cheaper, but this turkey vest seems like it's made well and has done the trick for me. So, anything else you guys would like to add about gear? Are you bringing any decoys or anything to your ground blind hunt, Andy?
Yeah, I did. I do have a Jake and a hen decoy. You know, I'll obviously have them along with me. Not sure. We'll see if I use them or not. And then the only other thing that I'm adding in my spread differently is some little stools, your fold up carry stools for sitting on following the blind.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a real good call. Do you have any particular way you're going to set up those decoys, Andy?
Honestly, I haven't thought about it yet.
All right. Well, just based off my experience and when I've hunted in ground blinds or whatnot, I have tried to quarter them too towards my blind. That's just based off of what I read and what I've seen. So I know, Bud, you killed that Jake out of your ground blind. How do you set up your decoys?
Well, how I set up my decoys, everything I've read and everything I've seen is normally if you're hunting out of a blind, you have an area where that Tom is going to be coming from. And the one thing that I will not do is I will not have that hen pointed towards that area. Because everything I've read is if that Tom comes into an opening and he sees that hen looking at him, he will hang up. Because at that point, he knows that that hen sees him, and that's when he's going to hang up and play hard to get. So I always want that hen looking away from him. That's going to force him to want to come and get on the other side of her. And I've even noticed that in the field behind my work. I always have turkeys back for this time of year, and I get to watch them and interact and stuff like that. And those toms are always jostling, you know, moving around to make sure that they're visible to those hens. And I find that's the biggest part. You know, that hunt that I got with that Jake, I had decoys out, but they were Jake's. I don't know if it was inexperience or whatever, but they wouldn't come in to my hen. And like I said, that hunt, I called them in with the goblin. I ended up sneaking out of the blind, going back to my truck. I got a half strutter, brought a half strutter out, and I waved that in the air, and that got those three Jakes to come running 500 yards across the field. For some reason, they came into the tunnel, they came into the gobble, and they came into a half strutter. They wanted nothing to do with the hen. I don't know if they wanted to just do a dominance thing or what, but that was the deal with them. But those were Jakes. You know, it would be probably be a totally different thing if I actually had a mature Tom in the area at that time.
Yeah, I'm sure they just wanted to beat up that Tom.
Yeah. But yeah, if I was going out and just setting up on a mature Tom, yeah, I would do a hen decoy, and I would just make sure that hen is going to end up being facing away from the direction that he's coming in from.
Very good. Very good. So, if we don't got any gear questions in the comments below, we might as well get into our plans for season A and even Bud's first season being season B. I'll briefly.
I have season A too.
Oh, you have season A. Andy has season B. Sorry.
Yeah, season B.
Sorry. So we can just go over our initial plans of those seasons. I'll briefly go over mine. I'm going to be in, I always get the zones confused, zone one, I believe I'm in, here in southwestern Wisconsin. If I don't have that zone right, that's the area I'll be in. Obviously, which has been much publicized, there is a lot of birds in this area of the state. As you can see by the deer, or by the turkey draw, there's a lot of tags, a lot of availability, a lot of opportunity. If you're in northern Wisconsin, Superior area, Rhinelander, and you missed out on a tag or only have one tag in your pocket, don't hesitate to come down here. Chances are you'll get on birds if you put in time. There's a lot of them down here, so I always encourage other people to do that. In terms of where are a lot of birds located this time of year down here, I tend to see them roosted, especially in the bluffs, off of points. We talk about deer bedding on points and checking out everything below. The turkeys, it's almost like deer are similar to turkeys. They roost just off the points. They can see everything in the valley below. They have good visual on the top of the ridge. So you got to come up from the opposite side where they cannot see you. And that's where I've seen most of the birds located, in the bluffs. In the river bottoms, it's been a different story. I've seen the turkeys, more of a traditional type roosting area has been, so you got thickets, but you got open areas within the thickets. That's where I've seen a lot of birds roosted as well. For instance, last year, this hunt took about 5 minutes. Was at a listening point, heard a bird gobble, drove my car down about 500 yards. He was gobbling right off the road. There's a bunch of thick stuff. Heard him gobble towards that opening, headed that direction. He flew down in that opening, made a big button hook around him, shot him right on the ground. So if you're hunting river bottoms down in southwestern Wisconsin, look for thick stuff with openings, because there's plenty of water in those river bottoms, so you don't got to worry so much about that. That's all I got, I guess, for now. Do you guys have any questions for me about hunting here in southwestern Wisconsin? I know you guys haven't experienced it, but anything that I could be missing?
So are you planning, are you running out Tuesday night to roost birds, or are you just going to fly by the seat of your pants Wednesday morning? You even hunt opening day?
Yeah, I'm going to hunt opening morning. I have birds based off of, actually I found these birds deer scouting last year, and early season they were stacked up in there, so if I got time, I might roost them, but they're going to be there just based off of historical patterns. And they were loaded up in there last year. I mean, there's 4 to 5 toms in that group, along with, I don't know, 10, 20, 20 hens, something like that. It was crazy. So that's my plan. That's kind of one of my honey holes. Believe it or not, it's a honey hole that is, I don't know, 100 yards or less off the road. And that's another point I want to make. Don't hesitate to hunt the roads. I know a lot of people say, don't let the roads get away from the pressure. I'll tell you what, me and Bud have encountered more turkeys alongside the road than, it's just matter of fact, they need that gravel, they need water.
Exactly. What's the number one thing a bird needs to digest their food?
Yep.
Gravel.
Yeah, and I'm going to take a word out of Andy's notebook here, the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid. Don't outthink them. They have a brain that big, so just hit all the stuff they need. Open hardwoods, thick stuff, water, and gravel, and you'll find the birds. That's all I got here in southwestern Wisconsin, what you should be looking for. Let's go to Bud, since he has season A.
Yeah, I'm hunting way northeast Wisconsin, northern unit. I think it's zone 5 or something like that. But yeah, I got a day and a half to make it happen. So as much as we said that, we want to appreciate the hunt, make it last as long as possible. Yeah, I'm planning to go up there, and I just want to pound it out and get it done. Because what ended up happening was I double booked that weekend, and I have the fishing tournament the same weekend that I'm supposed to be turkey hunting. So ended up, I took off Wednesday and I took off Thursday, and I'm putting that towards my turkey hunt. And I probably won't get up there to roost birds, just for the simple fact that it's anywhere from an hour to hour and a half to actually get up to the area. But I'm going to get up there before dawn, and I'll just start driving roads, stop on high points and call if I get something to respond. I know there's just a bunch of creeks and rivers up there, so that's probably going to be my MO, is just stopping in creek bottoms, looking for tracks in the roads, looking for strutter marks in the roads. There's plenty of sand pits, so I'll check sand pits for as far as dustings. But that'll be my plan. I'll just start driving, put the miles on, a lot of windshield time. And I mean, every time I go up there, I tend to run across at least one or two birds, so I'm just crossing my fingers that I'll just keep that streak going and run across something that can make it happen. If I go up Wednesday and if I run everything that I know and check every spot that I want to check and I don't see anything, I'll probably just chalk up my season, and I'll probably end up going fishing on Thursday too. that'll be my plan. Because, I mean, for me, yeah, I'm all about, eating what you kill. But in our household, I can't do that with turkey. If I shoot a turkey, I got to eat the entire turkey myself, because my wife is deathly allergic to it. So it's just going to be turkey jerky or lunch meat for me. So the turkey hunt is one of those things where it's the challenge, you know, and the actual hunt of the bird. You know, whether I get the meat or not, I mean, that's just it. I mean, and being a Wisconsin resident, I'm out, I think, $13 or something like that. So $13 to go chase them for a day, that's well worth it for me.
Yeah. It's cheaper than going to the movies.
Exactly.
So. Right.
A lot more fun, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to put one solid day in it, and then I'll play it from here. But my technique is pretty much drive the roads. Drive the roads and call.
Yep. And then it's been pretty successful just to get on birds up there that way. All right, Andy, what do you got heading in to your first turkey season with Archer? Got any goals, what you guys are looking for, Jake's, Tom's? Hen with a beard, what you guys trying to get done?
Well, since Archer's with me, you know, I just want him to get the experience. You know, for him being new, you know, yeah, if we get a mature Tom coming in, that would be ideal. But, you know, just getting them out there and to experience the birds, getting the birds to react, getting them in close like that, I think that is, I mean, that's my goal. It's just to make his experience good, to fuel that fire for, you know, following season.
Yep. I agree with you. To get them to feel that first gobble, being within 75 yards of that gobble, that's kind of my goal for even my little brother coming up this year. But we can get into that later as the season progresses for some of my other goals. That's cool with you guys.
Yeah.
Cool. Right on. You guys have anything to add to this segment of the podcast?
About the closure of our pregame of turkey season.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's exciting to move around and chase after those things. I guess we can get into the two truths and a lie from last week. We had one entry, and yep, we had our friend Thompson. He guessed number three. Which I'm sorry, Thompson, it wasn't number three. But thanks for your participation. We really appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, buddy, in I think season E. I got Thompson from Illinois coming up here, so we'll be excited to see him.
Illinois boy?
Yep. So I'll be able to meet him finally, and yeah, I'm going to help him chase after some birds, hopefully. So I guess we don't have any crankbaits to give away then. So Bug gets to save some money. So that's not a bad thing either.
I appreciate that. So just if anybody was curious, the lie was I've gone sturgeon spearing and I speared a sturgeon. I've gone sturgeon spearing as a spectator one day of my life. And we saw one short sturgeon. But I have never actually done it myself. And if anybody has a shack and an extra spear, I'll be more than willing to go with them. But that's quite an investment for me to do it.
Yeah, that's...
I'd love to do it if anybody wants to invite me.
Yeah, that is... Bud and I were talking about that last year. It's just a tough investment at this point in our lives. And I think someday we'll get something like that going between the three of us. That would be a fun time, I think. So,
but. Yeah, I mean, I looked at spear, you know, just the spear alone, you're looking at like $2,000. That's not even including your shack and cutting your hole.
Yeah. I think when we're retired and have our retirement funds or something like that, maybe we'll do it. But until then.
But we're closer. We have a four-wheeler now. So at least we have a way to get on the ice.
That's true. And I do have to say. If you guys want to fund that sturgeon spearing so you guys can actually see that, like, listen to our podcast as much as you can. We need subscribers. We need all the support we can get so we can actually do that fun stuff. So, yeah. You guys have anything else to add to the show this evening?
Well, unless you want to do two truths and a lie.
Well, I don't think... We don't have any people online now, but if they want to participate in the comments after they listen to us,
well, yeah,
we can do that.
They have all week to do it. They have all week to do it, Eric.
1 week from Tuesday at 7 p.m. That's our typical time. That can always change, though.
Yeah.
We can do two truths and a lie. I can be the guinea pig this time.
I like it.
Okay.
Well, you're the only one that hasn't done it, so you should do it.
Yeah, I'll do that. So, two truths and a lie. First one. I've caught a 15-inch inland brown trout. Second one. I've shot a buck over 140 inches. Third one, I've caught a largemouth bass over 23 inches. So, in the comments below, put 1, 2, or 3. And you'll be entered. What should we throw in this week? Yep.
What was your second one?
Buck. 140-inch buck.
Yep, 140.
Over 140-inch buck. You got hunting and fishing.
And the largie. That's number three. So one's trout, two's whitetail buck over 140, and three is a 23-inch bass. So, and the first one was 15-inch trout. So 1, 2, or 3, and I'm thinking, why not throw another crankbait? I'll throw a crankbait, one of my crankbaits in there. So comment below. We'll appreciate that. And that's all I got for the two truths and a lie. You guys want to wrap up this episode then?
Not much else for me. Do we get any questions?
No, no questions this week.
No questions, all right.
No, but I'll tell you what, I did have a fun time talking about outdoors with you guys. And I could talk outdoors with you guys every day, I think. But I do want to wrap up the show. Don't hesitate to check us out on all popular social media channels. Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. YouTube's our most important one because that's where we upload all of our content. And we need subscribers. We need all the support you can get. Just look us up at Red Bearded Predators. We also do have this podcast. If you can't make time to watch this webcast, I understand people have stuff going on. Look at our podcast. We're on Apple. I believe we're on Google Podcast. We're on Spotify. There's a bunch of other ones that we're on. And if you guys need gear, click below our videos because we want to try and make a commission off that so we could go sturgeon spearing. So I guess we'll leave you guys on that tonight. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. Thanks for watching. We appreciate your support. And we'll see you guys next time on RBP Weekly. Thanks.